All right, welcome back to the listener's commentary on the Gospel of Matthew. In this recording, we are going to be looking at Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 through 13. And as always, let's make sure we review the context so we know where we're at in the story, as well as in Matthew's way of organizing that story. So let's start here with the broader context. One of the themes of the last teaching block, clear back in chapter 13, was the hiddenness of the kingdom, right? We had all those parables about the kingdom of God in chapter 13. And we see this little theme, how the kingdom starts out small, but then slowly grows, or how it's all throughout the dough, but it's imperceptible, how it's intermixed with true disciples and false disciples, like wheat mixed with weeds. And all of that emphasizes this theme of the hiddenness of the kingdom. And not only that, how there's going to be different responses to that hiddenness and the way this kingdom works. And we've seen that over the last handful of chapters. We've seen all sorts of mixed responses to Jesus and his ministry of the kingdom. We've also seen that Jesus has been giving glimpses of his glory, his kingship, and his power to the 12. By like things like feeding the crowds or walking on water, right? And so he's giving them glimpses of his glory and his kingship. They're struggling to understand it. Then that all kind of culminates in the last chapter, that last little episode we were looking at the end of chapter 16, where Peter confesses his belief that Jesus is the Messiah and the Son of the living God. And all of that means that the king is here, and so the kingdom is here. It's actually here breaking into the real world, and it is imperceptible, and it is small, right? And so it's breaking into the world, even though it doesn't look like it, and even though it doesn't look like what the disciples themselves expected. So now, in this story that we're about to look at, just three of Jesus' disciples are going to get an even greater glimpse of his glory. So that's the broader context, how this all fits into this section flowing out of the last teaching block. Also, the immediate context. Chapter 16 ends with this surprising and intriguing promise from Jesus. He said, right at the end of chapter 16, verse 28, "Truly I say to you, there are some of those who are standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." And as I noted when we talked about that, some have said, see, Jesus was wrong. He didn't come in the first century. But I think assuming that's about the second coming just ignores the fact that Jesus routinely and regularly says, no one knows the day or the hour of his return, not even Jesus himself. Only the Father knows that, that it wasn't our place to know. That's consistent in the teaching of Jesus. So if this were about the second coming, it would be counter to all of what Jesus has taught throughout his ministry. Furthermore, as I noted there, that it's really an allusion to Daniel chapter 7. The Son of Man coming into his kingdom derives from Daniel chapter 7, which suggests it's more about the vindication of Jesus after his death as the Son of Man and being exalted to God's right hand as King of the nations of the world. That's what's going on in Daniel 7. And what's even more, it seems that Matthew, as well as Mark and Luke, at least saw a kind of an initial glimpse of that as the transfiguration, the event in this snapshot we're going to look at in this recording. And the reason I say that I think it seems like Matthew, Mark, and Luke all saw the transfiguration as connected to this promise of Jesus coming into his kingdom is because each of them connects the transfiguration very tightly to that promise or that saying of Jesus. And they do so by mentioning a short number of days. So even though Matthew, Mark, Luke will frequently have their own order of events, they always tie the transfiguration to the saying about seeing the Son of Man coming into his kingdom. And so it just seems to me that they understood this as like some sort of initial little glimpse, initial little snapshot of the glory of the king, and knowing that even though he's going to go and be rejected, he really is the king, and he really will inherit the kingdom. He will be vindicated. So here in chapter 17, Matthew makes that connection to the promise of Jesus, the Son of Man, coming into his kingdom. He makes the connection with that by saying this in 17:1, 6 days later. 6 days later. That's very specific, and that's not typical. We don't get that kind of stuff very often in Matthew or the other Gospels. And so when it happens, it shows a close connection to the preceding section. And so this is Matthew's way of tying the transfiguration to the promise Jesus just made at the end of chapter 16. Now, one little challenge, and I'm not going to spend really any time on it, I just want to highlight it for you, is Matthew says 6 days later. Luke says about 8 days later. Notice he says about 8 days later. Why the difference? It probably has to do with the various ways of counting days. Sometimes you count it whole day. Sometimes you might include parts of days. And so Matthew's counting one way, Luke's counting another. The point is it's about a week later. And so 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up on a high mountain by themselves. Now, we don't know the exact site of the mountain. One of the mountains traditionally identified with it is Mount Tabor because it stands out on the horizon. It's just not that it's really a high mountain. If it's still closer to Caesarea Philippi, which is where Matthew 16 was at, if they're still up north, well, then the tallest mountain in the region is Mount Hermon. That's actually the highest mountain in the entire area. Maybe that's the mountain. We don't know for sure, but it's a high mountain. And mountains are often places of divine revelation, both in the Bible and in the ancient Near East. In fact, there's likely an echo of Moses' mountain experience here. When he goes up on the mountain, he encounters the glory of God, and he descends the mountain, and his face was shining, right? And so there's likely an echo of Moses' experience with that here, but as we'll see in the story, Jesus supersedes Moses. So he takes Peter, James, and John up on a high mountain, and look at what happens in verse 2. And he was transfigured before them. That's just kind of a weird word, isn't it? Transfigured. What does that mean? All that means is his appearance or his figure, right? His appearance was changed. In some sort of way, the way Jesus looked was radically transformed or changed. How so? Well, let's keep reading. He was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun. There's that echo probably of like Moses' face shining. And his garments became as white as light. And so he's gleaming, he's shining in some sort of way. And then look what happens, verse 3. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, talking with him. And so now all of a sudden, in this weird sort of moment on this mountain where Jesus is shining, two of the great heroes of Jewish history, right? Moses and Elijah appear with him. Elijah, who was supposed to appear before the Messiah came and who stands as the head of the prophets, that's Elijah. And Moses, who was the giver of the law, and the Messiah was supposed to be a prophet like Moses, right? That's what the book of Deuteronomy says. And so you have these two figures who stand for the law and the prophets, and who in some way were connected to the coming of the Messiah, now appear, and they're having a conversation apparently with Jesus. And this is a crazy moment, and Peter just can't contain himself. And so all of a sudden he blurts out and says something without thinking. Look at verse 4. Peter responded and said to Jesus, "Lord, it's good that we are here. If you want, I'll make three tabernacles here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." It just seems like Peter is overcome by the moment. And so he's like, "I'll pitch tents for everybody. Let's make some tents. I can make little lean-tos here and we can all stay in them." Now, think about the kind of the silliness of that. Do Moses and Elijah need tents to stay in? They currently are residing in glory with God, and they've appeared on this moment for this particular purpose. They don't really need tents. Maybe he's thinking this is a way of honoring Moses and Elijah and Jesus, but it's not quite what God had in mind. So Peter blurts this out, and then look what happens in verse 5. While he was still speaking, like he's overcome with this, he's talking about it, thinking out, you know, a plan of how he's going to do this. While he's still speaking, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and behold, a voice from the cloud said. Now, all throughout the Old Testament, a cloud communicated God's presence. And that's the idea here. And now there's a voice speaking from the cloud. This is clearly God speaking from heaven. And they would know that in their context, right? They know the stories. You got Moses and Elijah, right? And there's all sorts of stories about clouds and God speaking associated with them. So now here's this cloud conveying God's presence. And now a voice from the cloud said this, "This is my beloved son with whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him." And Matthew, all throughout his gospel, has hinted at the full significance of who Jesus is by noting that he's God's son and helping us understand that that doesn't just mean like a royal title. It means something more in the case of this one. So we see this with the promise to Joseph way back before Jesus was born. Matthew chapter 1, verse 21, "She will give birth to a son, and you shall name him Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." Now, all this took place so that what was spoken through the Lord by the prophet will be fulfilled. "Behold, a virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will name him Emmanuel," which when translated means God with us. So he's God's son, and he's also God with us in some sort of unique sort of way. You get similar words at Jesus' baptism in Matthew chapter 3. "And behold, a voice from the heavens said, 'This is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased.'" And so here again, that's restated. "This is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." And so those very words are restated here. And the emphasis is on the supremacy of Jesus. Listen to him. It's not Moses plus Elijah plus Jesus. It's Jesus. He's God's son. He's God's chosen one. He's the one you need to listen to. And all of this confirms what Peter said just a week ago when Peter confessed, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And so listen to him. Now God speaks from heaven, emphasizing their need to pay attention to hear, listen, and obey Jesus. And then Matthew adds this little detail in verse 6. When the disciples heard this, here's this cloud, here's this thunderous voice speaking out of heaven. When the disciples heard this, they fell down to the ground and were terrified. And so picture Peter, James, and John face down on the ground, like hiding their faces, realizing they're in the presence of the majesty on high, and they're terrified. And then Jesus came up to them, touched them, and said, "Get up, don't be afraid." And raising their eyes from the ground, they looked up and looked around, and they saw no one except Jesus alone. And in this moment, I think when Matthew says that, he's wanting us as the readers to hear that at this point, Jesus stands alone. Elijah and Moses, they had their time and they had their place, but Jesus is God's son. And he himself now supersedes all of that, and he stands alone by himself. Hear him. Listen to him. Well, after that little scene on the mountain, verse 9 picks up with what happens next. When they were coming down from the mountain, I believe it's Luke lets us know that it's the next day when this happened. When they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus commanded them, saying, "Tell the vision to no one until the Son of Man has risen from the dead." In other words, keep this on the down low. This was a glimpse of my glory. I wanted you to see it. I wanted you with me, but you saw a glimpse of my glory and my power and my kingship and what's going to happen. Yes, I'm going to be rejected, but I will be vindicated. I will be king. I am the Son of Man, but don't tell anyone about this until the Son of Man, right, from Daniel chapter 7, has risen from the dead. And so that phrase, Son of Man, connects this again very clearly with the promise at the end of chapter 16 and the saying about seeing him coming in his kingdom and his glory. And the disciples then asked him, "Why then do the scribes say that Elijah must come first?" They're trying to put all this together, right? They've just seen this vision of Jesus shining and in his glory. Moses and Elijah were there. They've been taught from childhood things about the coming of the Messiah, about what that would look like and how that would play out. It's not seeming to fit what they expected, and they're trying to put all the pieces together. In fact, we learn from Mark's account that they're confused by the idea of Jesus saying when he rises from the dead. It's just like, wait, I just don't get Son of Man, death, rising. And they're trying to put all of this together. They're hearing it. They're hearing Jesus speak of the coming of God's kingdom. They believe ancient promises are being fulfilled, but it doesn't fit with everything they've heard in their whole life. And so how does this all work? If Jesus is inaugurating the kingdom of God, then where do the prophecies about the coming of Elijah fit in? That's what they're wondering. And Jesus answered and said, Elijah is coming and will restore all things. Jesus assures them that in that certain sense, the scribes are right. Elijah does come first, just as the ancient prophecies had foretold. But then Jesus goes on and explains further by clarifying what that means. Just like Jesus being the Messiah meant something different than what they expected, Elijah coming first was a little different too. Here's what Jesus says in verse 12 and 13. He says, "But I do say to you that Elijah already came, and they did not recognize him, but did to him whatever they wanted. So also the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands." Like, they treated this predecessor, this forerunner, this Elijah figure badly too, and they're going to do the same thing to me because they're not paying attention and they don't recognize him. And then verse 13 makes it clear who we're talking about. Then the disciples understood that he had spoken to them about John the Baptist. And so they treated John the Baptist, that is the second Elijah, badly, in keeping with their own self-serving desires. They're going to do the same thing to the Messiah, right? So Jesus is beginning to try to drive home this point here to the three, in other places to the 12. He's trying to help them see that he really is the Messiah. He really is the Son of God, just as Peter confessed, right? Now the voice from heaven in the cloud confirmed all that, and he's trying to help them see, but that doesn't negate the fact that they're going to treat me badly, reject me, but I will be vindicated. I will be raised from the dead. I will be exalted to the right hand of the Father. So stick with me on this one, and let's figure this out. And so over the next few chapters, Matthew's going to point out several other times where Jesus has this kind of conversation with the 12, trying to help them understand what's going on here. So as we wrap up this particular section, let's just offer a couple reflections. The first is this: Jesus is the culmination of the story. I think that's the significance, at least one of the significances, of the Transfiguration. You have Moses and Elijah, the law and the prophets, but they all were kind of like forerunners, predecessors. That is a big story that culminates in the person of Jesus. He is the culmination of the Old Testament story. He is the culmination of the law and the prophets. They all were leading up to him, as the Apostle Paul says in Galatians chapter 3, that they found their fulfillment and their culmination point in Jesus himself. And on that theme then, the second reflection is closely related to that. It's that Jesus is the one that's greater than the law and the prophets. He's the one that's greater than Elijah and Moses. As great as Elijah was, as great as Moses was, right? These are great heroes of the Jewish faith. Jesus himself is greater. And so not only is the culmination of the story, he also supersedes the greatest players in that story. And then that leads to the third and final reflection. What really is said to the three disciples there on the mountain is also spoken to all of us who want to be disciples, and that is, hear him. Listen closely to Jesus. Seek to understand Jesus. In fact, the word hearing, listening in a biblical thought world always includes doing. You haven't really listened until you've also put into practice and done. And so hearing entails obeying. So hear him. Listen to him. If you want to be his disciple, well, Jesus is the culmination of the story. He is the greatest prophet, the greatest teacher, the greatest one. He is the Son of the living God. So listen to him and do what he says. That's what it means to be a disciple. All right, thanks for tuning into this session of the Listener's Commentary on the New Testament. The Listener's Commentary is a listener-supported, crowd-funded Bible teaching ministry that's made possible by the generosity of dozens of folks just like you. So if you're one of those who supports this ministry, thanks a ton for your support. And if you've been impacted in any way by this ministry, would you prayerfully consider joining the team of supporters? You can do that by going to listenerscommentary.com, clicking the Give button, listenerscommentary.com, Give, and that will redirect you to a page through World Family Mission where you can set up a one-time donation, or you can give a monthly recurring donation as well. Thanks a ton in advance for your support.